Good evening. The topic I talked a little bit about tonight, Pesach and Parshas Kedoshim, which is one of this week's Parshas, if I'm not mistaken. The Torah tells us the prohibition of which literally translated means one is not permitted to put a stumbling block in front of the blind. What that means, al-Pi'alacha, is a little more complicated. And the topic, she just got mentioned in the Rosh, is a very, very huge and broad one, which you can talk about for many, many hours, partially because it just kind of intersects with a lot of other areas of halacha by its very nature. And what I'd like to do tonight is just in a very general, broad way to sketch out some of the general shailos that come up and maybe suggest a framework for putting some of the bigger chakiras into. So just to start with some details. So the Gemara tells us, beginning with Avodah Zarah and other places, first of all, so the language of the pasuk sounds like it means that if you have a person who's literally blind, Rachmanah Litzlan, so you shouldn't place a rock in front of them so they trip. That's what it sounds like the pasuk means. The Chazal tell us that there are two other levels of interpretation also. One being that you shouldn't give people bad advice. As said, somebody who is, so to speak, an Iver, not necessarily physically, but he's an Iver as far as his knowledge of a situation. The person wants to buy a house, and he comes to you and he says, I want to buy this house, is it a good idea or not? And you have some interest in not being straight out. Maybe you want to buy the house yourself, or whatever it is. For some reason, you don't tell him the right answer. You tell him that he should buy a different house, and that house would be best for him, or you tell him to buy a house when it's not best for him. Maybe you want to buy the house that he would buy otherwise, or whatever it is. Maybe you have some deal with the owner of the house. So if you give this person bad advice, if you mislead this person, so the Gemara says, that's also a violation of what they really see from motion. Thirdly, this is a well-known application. The Gemara tells us also that if you partake in an avera, if you help enable an avera, really, that is also called a neighbor. So, just to give one standard example that we'll come back to, so let's say, try to keep things kind of vague, let's say I give somebody a pork sandwich to eat, and he eats it, let's say, for now, let's say he eats a pork sandwich, so I violate with that the neighborly speaking mixture. Maybe a little bit vague about the stages of the process, because that's going to be an issue. But at some level, if I give somebody a pork sandwich to eat, then he eats it, so I violate with the neighborly speaking mixture. But apparently this person is suffering from some kind of spiritual blindness, because they're ready to do an avera, and you're helping them, so you've kind of tripped them up on that path. Clearly, it's only talking about a case where the person is at the very least very likely to do that. Let's say if the person you know is religious, and you know that they only want to take the pork sandwich so they can destroy it, or they can do something permissible with it, they want to make a football out of it, whatever it is, so there isn't a prohibition to give that sandwich to such a person. The case that we're talking about is, at the very least, it's very likely, or it's a reasonable assumption, this person will actually consume the sandwich to Issa. So that's what we're dealing with here. If you have a person who is likely to violate Nisr, and you enable that, so that's a problem of what's neighborly to think about. Just to mention some more background about that before going into anything analytical. So the Gemara does make a distinction that's relevant on a level of Daraisa, that there's a concept called Chad Avdinavra and Trey Avdinavra. That basically means one side of the river and two sides of the river. That if I want something that's prohibited, so it could be that I'm on the same side of the river as what I want, Chad Avdinavra, and really I could just go over and get it myself, but I'm lazy so I ask you to get it for me. Or it could be that it's on the other side of the river. That it's Trey Avdinavra, it's two sides of the river, I'm on one side of the object and the other side. And I really need you to help me get what I want. I can't reach it without you. So the Gemara says that, strictly speaking, the prohibition of the right level only applies when it's trey avodinara, when he really needs you, he really needs you to help him violate the avodah. But if he could do it without you, then that's what we call trey avodinara, that's what we call fat avodinara, and strictly speaking, the Sfidei Mitchell doesn't attach. Now, first, we do discuss the details of that, what exactly is considered to be chad avodinara, what's considered to be trey avodinara. Does it have to be absolutely impossible or just difficult and you're making it easier? Those details I'm not going to get into, that's what we're supposed to talk about. But whatever the details are, strictly speaking, if you can't do it without you, that's called trey avodinara, and to help him to be the actual enabler when without you it wouldn't be possible, that's the right to listen to you there. And to help out where he could have done it without you, in that Torah we don't call that listening to listen to Mitchell. Now Rishonim do suggest, Rishonim in the Avodah Zarah, Rishonim in the beginning of Shabbos, do suggest that there is a, it's a drabanan that's relevant. And that's what we call Mesayei Yudei Ovrei Avera. Literally speaking, to help out people who are doing Avera, so what we call Mesayei, that's a Mesayei drabanan. And so it basically tells us that even if you want to tell me that it's not biblically prohibited to help out where I am not absolutely vital to the circumstances, but it's still rabbinically prohibited because that's what we call Mesayeya. Now, just a little footnote here. One could spend a long time analyzing Yisra Rabban and Mesayeya. Because Mesayeya, one could question what that's about. One could ask, is that a type of Lefneiver Rabban? That is Lefneiver Deraisa when you're absolutely vital, and when you're not vital is Lefneiver Rabban? Or one could say there's a whole different concept here. Now, we have a mitzvah in that Torah, it's also in Parshas Kedoshim, of Tovacha. That if somebody's doing the wrong thing, so you have an obligation to rebuke him. Now, it's a question nowadays and always how exactly that mitzvah applies. When are you obligated to say something, what you're not going to listen to? There are a lot of details of that. But at the very least, one could say that if I'm actively helping, that I'm certainly flying in the spirit of Tovacha. One could make a case that nowadays the Gemara seems to suggest like that, that if I see somebody doing a error, and certainly if I'm not going to be so effective, then maybe I don't have an obligation to actually say something what the Torah sounds like there's an obligation.
Not to mean if it's a lot when it's our side.
Could be, right? There's a lot of definitely what to talk about, so that's a whole subtopic that we're not even getting into tonight. But just know, this is also this concept of Mesayeya, which has this whole world within itself to discuss what's the nature of Yisra Mesayeya. But those are the best system background before we start anything analytical. So we're dealing here with three surim that come out of one pasuk. An issur to put a stumbling block in front of the blind, an issur to give somebody bad advice, and an issur to help out in an avera. And that last one, daraisa, applies only when you're vital, and midrabanan is an issur also when you're not absolutely necessary, and it's a question what the nature of that issur drabanan is. That's basically what we said so far. That's more or less clear? Okay. So, and she's also mentioned that the Gemara is also clear in pointing out that the issur of helping somebody with doing an avera doesn't only apply to Jews. We're talking about the person here helping here, the Iber. The Gemara is very clear to give an example that it also applies to non-Jews. One of the examples the Gemara gives is giving Eivir Menachai to a non-Jewish person deeds. Since Eivir Menachai is one of the seven mitzvot of Noah, and it's something that all of humanity is prohibited to do. So if you provide a non-Jewish individual with Eivir Menachai, really anybody, provide anybody with Eivir Menachai who's going to eat it, or who's likely to eat it, so that's also a violation of the Midrash. So the Gemara seems to go out of its way to use an example in order to perhaps highlight the point this is not something that only applies between Jew and Jew, but even between any person, it basically is this idea that one's not permitted to enable someone to violate a prohibition. Gemara's and Avodah Zarah in a couple places involved, and Daf Yudali, these sugyas come up interspersed in different places in the first part of Avodah Zarah. And Daf Vav is one of the places, and Daf Yudali is another. Throughout the first part of Avodah Zarah comes up in a couple of places. Oh, so that's a good question. In general, there may, having established that there is this with the Iver by non-Jews, it still is possible that there are a lot of differences. Right? There could be a lot of details that may not apply to non-Jews. That could get into a larger question, and we may or may not, time permitting, get into that a little more. Now, there are a couple of central questions within the Yisra Lefneiva. And really what we want to focus on is the third interpretation of helping out with others. It's interesting to note that Mishnah Sinas actually quotes Mishnah Sinas and Mishnah Reish on the dates, where he talks about the Sisser. He actually quotes an opinion that really the last two interpretations are really the Iker interpretations. And in fact, if I were to put an actual rock in front of an actual blind person, I would not violate with Nadir. Mishnah Sinas is not so convinced. He points out, they Mikriyos and Deshuto, and don't normally believe that Sukkim completely leave their Pashut meanings. They can have additional meanings to say that the Pashut meaning doesn't apply, and Mishnah Sinas finds that difficult. He suggests an answer, but it's probably not the case. But he does quote his opinion. The Torah Tanima discusses such a possibility also, is not so convinced that's true either. But it's just interesting to highlight the extent to which the later interpretations are the focus of the discussion, that there is this opinion in Achronim that the Mishnah Sinas and the Torah Tanima both talk about, that one who actually does the physical act of putting a physical rock in front of a blind person doesn't even violate the system. But let's assume that's not the case. Let's assume that all three of these cases are interpretations of this pasuk. But the last one is the one I want to focus on, and there are a lot of central questions. There are two or three basic hakiras that one asks about with Neiver, which I'd like to suggest ties into a more basic question of how you read this pasuk. The pasuk, so we've said the pasuk is interpreted in three ways. So a question I'd like to keep in mind, which I think might be relevant to some of the central questions of this Neiver, is this really three separate interpretations? Is it pshat that the Torah tells us one thing and Chazal tell us the Pasuk is coming to tell us other things also? Or maybe I could say no. Maybe I could say that really it's all one big issue that's just very broadly interpreted. I mean, the Torah is just saying never take advantage of somebody else's disability to cause them to go further along the path that's good. Whether that's physical, they're blind and you're causing them to trip. Whether it's financial, they don't know how to make money and you're causing them to be worse off. Or whether it's spiritual, they have a tendency towards the vera and you're making it possible for them to continue along that path. So one could suggest that really there are different levels of interpretation here. We're talking about one broad concept which has a lot of different applications. You don't know this necessarily, so maybe that's a way of saying that anybody who is disabled, anybody who is held back from seeing or knowing or understanding, so we have an obligation to protect them and to not cause them to be further hampered by this disability, whether it's physical or otherwise. Perhaps. You could say like that. Or you could say otherwise, you could say no, the pasuk means one thing, and Chazal tells other interpretations also, Torah Shabbat Pah, whatever you want to call it, but Chazal is telling us different interpretations of the pasuk. I think that question might be relevant to one of the central chakiras I like to ask in the Mishnah and Lishna 10 Mitzvot. One of the popular questions that the Achronim like talking about is the following. So let's go back to our case of I give somebody a pork sandwich, and he eats it. So what does he do wrong, the person who eats it? He violates the issur of eating pork. Torah tells you not allowed to eat the basar of a chazir, and this person has violated that aver. Fine. What did I do wrong? Did I violate the issur of eating chazir? Never ate chazir in my life. You can tell me that I violated the issur of chazir? Or perhaps I could say no. I didn't violate a chazir. I violated with Neiver. He violates eating non-kosher food. I violated a separate Yisrael of Lifnei Yivim. Or maybe that's not the case. Maybe the Chiddush HaTorah of Lifnei Yivim L'Sitei Mitzvot, this is something a lot of Achronim suggest, means that I participate in the Aveira. But the Torah not only prohibits me from doing an Aveira, it prohibits me from helping an Aveira. And that if I take any part in the Aveira, even if I'm not the one who's actually doing it, I'm still responsible. Yeah, we'll get to that. That's one of the examples. It's a general kind of question you can ask. There's a you have this idea, for example, in American law. If you have an American law, let's say three people together plot a murder, but one person actually pulled the trigger. Nonetheless, I think under American law, all three can be tried equally for murder and punished to the same degree of severity. They're all equally responsible. All the components of the process are all considered to be equally responsible, even though one person may have actually done it. So maybe we have such a concept in halacha also, that maybe even though only one person actually ate the pork sandwich, but if he needed me in order to do it, then I made it possible, so we are both equally responsible. That's the question I'm going to ask. So how do we understand the Lifnei V'Lisi Tin Mitchell? If the Gemara is telling me that I'm not allowed to help out in Aveira, is that suggesting that I actually join in the Aveira itself? Or no, I had nothing to do with that Aveira. I violated different Issur. Lifnei V'Lisi Tin Mitchell. You find this discussion, for example, what example you find in the beginning of Shabbos. If you ever learn the first Mishnah in Shabbos, so you see that the whole Machlokas Rishonim there, that the first Mishnah in Shabbos tells a lot of cases about Hotzah. You have an Ani, you have a Balabais, a guy comes to the door, and he knocks on the door on Shabbos, and he asks for food. So, if the person is going to give him, if the owner of the house is going to give him food to take outside, so somebody's going to violate Hotzah here. And the Mishnah tells you different permutations. The owner of the house sticks his hand out, and the Ani takes it from his hand. The Ani takes it from the hand inside the house. And the Mishnah tells you different permutations of how this food is passing hands between the owner and the Baal, and the Ani, and between the house and the outside. And the different cases, the Mishnah says, in this case, they're both chayiv. In this case, one guy is chayiv, one guy is pater. So the Rishonim asks, how can it be? How could you ever have a case where one guy is going to be chayiv, one guy is going to be pater? If you've got two people doing an action together, so it's got to be they're both chayiv, because we have this principle of Lifnei V'Lisi Tin Mitchell. So that would mean that if he needs me in order to do the Aveira, so I'm also over in Aveira. So how could the Mishnah tell me that, oh, if I do it this way, so the Ani is chayiv and I'm pater? How could I be pater? I'm over Lifnei V'Lisi Tin Mitchell. That's what the Rishonim Tosfos and the Rans, the Rishonim ask in the beginning of Shabbos. And that's why I mentioned earlier that the discussion of Misayeya comes up in Rishon Beginning of Shabbos in the context of this question. The Rosh talks about it also. So some Rishonim, right, that all you have to, some Rishonim come up with a technical answer in order to explain why Lifnei V'Lisi doesn't apply. And others say, no, yeah, okay, fine, you violate Lifnei V'Lisi. But the Mishnah's not talking about that. The Mishnah's talking about Shabbos. So as far as Hilchos Shabbos, one of the parties can be puzzled. Yeah, you're right, he will violate a different Isser of Lifnei V'Lisi. But we're not interested in that. This is Maseches Shabbos. We're talking about the laws of Shabbos, so only one of them, in certain cases, might violate the laws of Shabbos. So these two approaches, as the Akronim explained, reflect these two possibilities within Lifnei V'Lisi. That, on the one hand, one could say Lifnei V'Lisi joins in on the other. And if a person violates Lifnei V'Lisi, so he is also being Machal Shabbos. And then, in order to deal with this Mishnah, you're going to have to find a technical answer to get out of Lifnei V'Lisi. You have to prove somehow that Lifnei V'Lisi doesn't apply in this case. Alternatively, you can take the approach of other Rishonim and say that no, Lifnei V'Lisi does apply, but it doesn't matter because we're talking about Shabbos, and the person who violates Lifnei V'Lisi is not violating Hilchos Shabbos. So that's basically the question that we're asking. Does one who joins in on this Aveira, one who enables the Aveira, is he joining in it, calling Machal Shabbos also? Or he's doing something separate called Lifnei V'Lisi? Why do we care what we call it? Yeah, the reason is because there are not convenience, especially when we talk about Hilchos Shabbos. So for example, and this is something that Rabbi Eger talks about in Shulchan Aruch, that if I'm a mumer L'chol Shabbos, if I am proven an established tendency to Machal Shabbos, that gives me a status of a mumer l'chol Torah kula. But normally, if I tend to habitually violate one avera, so I can be a localized mumer for that avera. But Shabbos, a broader category, if I'm a mumer l'chol Shabbos, I'm a mumer for other averas for l'chol Torah kula. So, what if, asks Ricky Banger, what if I'm a mumer for lifnei iver by chol Shabbos? So does that make me a mumer for chol Torah kula? Or does that make me a mummer for just lifnei iver, and that's not the full Shabbos, and that's not called Torah kula? So that's one case in which this, how you define it would make a difference. Ricky Baker has a lot of questions like that. You have a lot of lumpish questions where you want to know whether a concept is general or specific, whether it becomes full Shabbos, for example, or something else. And every time you have a question like that, you have Ricky Baker asking, oh, so it's not kamina for a mummer, so what are we going to call that? So that's one example. Another example is the case that you mentioned. There really are a lot of examples of this. We're not going to discuss many of them, so I don't want to get necessarily tied up at this point. But we'll mention that example. So the question of, there is a very important and often discussed Machlokas Rishonim Maseches Sanhedrin. The Gemara says in the Sanhedrin, that fine ballad, the whole discussion of Yehari Val Yabur. And we know there are three things, strictly speaking, for which one is required to violate him, to sacrifice his life rather than to violate. Normally we say that one is supposed to violate mitzvah Torah if his life is at stake, but there are three exceptions. And these exceptions normally are seem to be Ritzicha and Gili Arayis and Avodah Zarah. Then the Gemara goes on to say that also Averis that are done in public or Averis that are done in Shas HaShemad are also Harvei Avon. And then the Gemara says after that, that it sounds like it's talking about those last two categories, that you think about Averis that are done in public, so if it's done in public, it's still okay to violate without sacrificing your life if it's being done in public for perhaps the personal benefit of the person who's forcing you to do it. It's not meant to be a whole public display against Judaism, but if the king wants you to do something for his own benefit, so then you don't have to give up your life. That's how most Rishonim understand. The Baal HaMor says no. The Baal HaMor says that this exception of Hanat Atman, what I call it, that if the person is forcing you to violate the Torah for his own benefit, not to make a point, but for his own benefit, it applies even to the big three, even to Avodah Zarah, Gil Arayis, and Mitzvah. Is this clear, by the way, this discussion? Should I say it again? So how do you know? Because the Baal HaMor writes, the Gemara says that if one provides lighting for a base of Avodah Zarah, one provides candles for a base of Avodah Zarah, so that's not Yehar Voyavar. So Baal HaMor says, you see, why is that true? Because no one's trying to make a big show here, they're only trying to get lighting for their own benefit. So therefore, you are not, so then this Hanach Atman clause comes to make it not Yehar Voyavar. That's what the Baal HaMor writes. So the other Achronim asks, the other Rishonim asks, the non-other Rishonim asks, that's not Avodah Zarah. Providing lighting for a base of Avodah Zarah, that's not an act of Avodah Zarah. That's with the either of Avodah Zarah. So yeah, maybe with the either of Avodah Zarah is now Yehar Lo Yavam, if it's Hanas Atman or whatever. But there's no proof from there that at any time when Avodah Zarah itself is now Yehar Lo Yavam. Does everyone follow that? So basically what happened here, just to extrapolate the main point, is that the Baal HaMor is basically saying that with the either of one of the big three would be treated like the big three, if not the fact that that case was an exception. So that with the either of Avodah Zarah would be Yehar Lo Yavor just as Avodah Zarah itself is. And the other Rishonim were saying, no, how do you know that? Maybe with the either is a different concept. But the Avodah itself is Yehar Lo Yavor. With the either is not a violation of Avodah Zarah or whatever. It's a violation of the either. So that central question of do you join in on the Avera itself, or are you violating your own separate private Avera of Ne'iver, is an important one. Like, there are a lot of other Nafkamidas which are not as important in Lemaisa, but those are two that have more Lemaisa ramifications. Hi.
Very interesting. It's so, according to Baal HaMor, how are these three distinct from anything else?
Because he's talking about the case where you're distinct from
any other Avera. In other words, if it's...
Well, yeah, they're Avera in private, wouldn't be Yehar Lo Yavor. These Averas in private are Yehar Lo Yavor. But if the motivation is Hanas Atman or something like that, that could be an exemption. Mm-hmm. That could be an exemption. And the other Rishonim say, no, that's only for the public thing.
Furthermore, the only public is, if it's Baratim, they're all Yehar Lo Yavor. If the motivation is
to come out of Yehar Lo Yavor.
But the Chilek then is, if it's not the Farnesia and the motivation is not Shemai, so then
that's what it sounds like. It's a little bit small. It just sounds like he's saying it's very difficult to maintain that position. That's what it sounds like he's saying. So, hi.
Is that a case of the light that the Baal HaMor brings out in his own case, or is he quoting
the Gemara said that, but he said you can see from that case that you are allowed that even by Avodah Zarah, sometimes it's not your Yehar Lo Yavor.
Where is that Gemara
on the line? $9. You see from there that sometimes even Avodah Zarah is not Yehar Lo Yavor. And the Rishonim say, no, that's what the Iver of Avodah Zarah. But Avodah Zarah itself, he wouldn't say that. So apparently the Baal HaMor assumes that Lifnei Iver attaches the same rules. And the other Rishonim say, no, you have to separate that. Lifnei Iver, you can violate Lifnei Iver on Avodah Zarah and not be considered that someone is doing Avodah Zarah.
Is it right?
Oh, so I don't get that. That's relevant. We'll get there.
Yeah.
And that also something that's pretty, that could be one of the, a number of differences that could come up between Willis Weaver and their impact on Jews and non-Jews. If we have time, we'll discuss that on more paper. But so that, in general, is a very major question that I want to talk about. When you say Willis Weaver, it's prohibited to help out with an Avera, so does this concept mean you're joining the Avera, or does it mean that you're doing something else? So what I want to suggest is that maybe that goes back to our original question, how do you read the pasuk? The pasuk telling us one thing that's broadly interpreted, or are we having additional levels of interpretation here that are distinct? Why does that affect this question? Because if you want to tell me that the pasuk is saying one broad thing, you're not allowed to trip anybody up, be it financially, be it religiously, be it physically, then logic dictates they all have to operate the same way. They all have to flow conceptually from the model of the blind person who you're tripping. So when you trip a blind person, so what the issue is clear. It's tripping him up. No one's going to suggest that, oh, when you trip a blind person and he falls and hurts himself, you join in on his fall and you are also in pain, and that's the problem, that's why you shouldn't do it, because it'll also hurt yourself. It's clear that that's not what the pasuk is talking about. There, if you're focusing on that part of the prohibition, you don't have this whole question. Right? The question is clear, that the nature of the prohibition is to not trip the person else. So if you want to suggest that there's only one broad concept here, then you have to say that the Avera idea works the same way also. That it's not shot that you join in on his prohibition. That's something else. It's that you're not allowed to trip him up. You're not allowed to get him in trouble upstairs. But we wouldn't say that you join in this prohibition, because it's the same way it's illogical to say you join in on his physically tripping, or you join in on his financial loss when he buys the wrong house. So too, you don't join in on his Avera. So the only way it's tenable to say that you do join in on the Avera, the only way that could make sense, is you say that no, that the idea that you're not allowed to help somebody out with an Avera is a whole different level of interpretation. It's not some broad reading of Lefnei Ivelei Sdei Mishal. Lefnei Ivelei Sdei Mishal means a couple of different types of Yisurim that all tie to the same puzzle. So that has a couple of other nafkaminas also. For example, the basic question of, this is something that Moshe Feinstein discusses in his Shuvahs and basically takes both sides, basic question of, are we dealing here with an Avera ben Adam l'Makom or an Avera ben Adam l'Chaver? If I help somebody eat a pork sandwich, have I committed an Avera ben Adam l'Makom or an Avera ben Adam l'Chaver? But if I believe that I partake in his Avera, so then, Pastor, we're talking about ben Adam l'Makom here. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want Jews eating non-kosher food, and he doesn't want Jews helping other Jews eat non-kosher food. So by helping this Avera take place, I have committed an Avera Bein Adam L'Makom. That's what it sounds like. If I help somebody else do an Avera, I am committing an Avera Bein Adam L'Makom. However, if you understand it the other way, then really it could be viewed as an Avera Bein Adam L'Chaver. And even though what I'm making him do wrong is an Avera Bein Adam L'Makom, I'm making him commit an Avera Bein Adam L'Makom by eating non-kosher food. But what I'm doing, my Yisur L'Fnei Iver, is really Bein Adam L'Chaver. That the Torah tells me don't trip up people, don't get them in trouble upstairs. So he has committed an offense against God, and I've committed an offense against him by helping him get in trouble upstairs. So this whole question of whether Rifta Iver is to be considered a Ben Adam L'Makom or Ben Adam L'Chaver, Moshe Feinstein, I believe, writes that they're both elements, but whether it's an Avera Ben Adam L'Makom or Ben Adam L'Chaver could also be tied into this question of how do you read the pasuk and how do you conceptually understand the system. And as I've alluded to last week, and I'm fond of pointing out, Mendel Breitstein made a very nice horror on that question once in past years. We mentioned last week, for those who are here, so we talked about the prohibition of Lashon Hara, and we mentioned that there's a well-known dispute between the Chafetz Chaim Rabbi Yisrael Salanter whether or not one is permitted to ask for mechila. If you hurt somebody, you have to ask for mechila. So are you allowed to do it in the case of Lashon Hara? We spoke Lashon Hara about somebody and they don't know about it. So normally when you hurt somebody's feelings, they know that you hurt their feelings. When you ask them for mechila, that they should forgive you for what they know that you did wrong to them. But Lashon Hara is a little bit of a strange case because you could hurt somebody without them knowing. So then it's a big question of halacha whether or not you should ask them for mechila when by doing that you could violate a different prohibition or nas dvaris. Because if you have to tell somebody that you spoke Lashon Hara about them, that will hurt their feelings. That will violate the Torah prohibition of nas dvaris. And maybe you're not allowed to do that even if you can't ask mechila any other way. And it seems the Chafetz Chaim had said that you have to ask mechila anyway. A apparently allowing me to violate a Nasa Barim, apparently, in some discussion, apparently allowing me to violate a Nasa Barim to obtain a Mechila. And the Shmuel Slater said, Chas V'Shalom, if you have to violate a Nasa Barim, then you shouldn't ask for Mechila. And I'm not going to give a Haskamah to say. So Mendel Breitstein pointed out that here's another Haskamah. This could come to be another Haskamah that I'm not focused. Because in that community, the whole question was not the luck of an Al Machadero is the question of Mechila. Right? That's something that's discussed in the Sefer of Kasabos, among other places. That basically, let's say I give you the pork sandwich, and now I want to do tshuva. So if we say that I partook in your Aveira, and we call that Ben Adam Lamakum, so I do tshuva privately in the normal process of tshuva, I don't have to ask it from Mechila. But if you want to tell me that it's an Aveira Ben Adam Lachadero, so then I'm going to have to, and what I really did wrong is that I tripped him up, I caused him to get in trouble upstairs, so maybe I have to ask him for Mechila for that. So what Mendel pointed out is you can have a scenario where the Chavetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Machlokas could come up again. Let's say I invite somebody to my sukkah, and I give him a pork sandwich in the sukkah, and he eats it. So he violates the Sneva right then. I violate the Sneva right then. Now, if we call that Ibn Adam Chavero, so I have to ask him Mechila for that. So let's say it comes in Kippur time, it's 11 months later, and I realize I have to ask him for Mechila. Now in that 11 months, this person who ate the pork sandwich in my sukkah has done Tshuva Gemura, and he has no interest in ever eating non-kosher food anymore, he has completely repented for his involvement in eating non-kosher food. Now, one of the versions of an Nos Barim is I'm not allowed to remind somebody about past events once they've repented. So if I want to get Mechila from my Yisrael Lefeiver, I'm going to have to call this guy up and say, yeah, you remember on Sukkot I gave you the pork sandwich and you ate it, so I now want to ask you for Mechila. But I'm not allowed to do that. I'm not allowed to remind him that he ate pork sandwich on Sukkot. So, as Mendel points out, that could be another ramification of this whole dispute between the Yisrael Salanter and the Chavetz Chaim as to another situation where asking Mechila could put you in violation of the Nos Barim. That's just something to keep in mind. So, there are other, there's another popular question I found in Manus, which ties into the other popular question, the question of whether you're joining in or whether it's a separate Avera, and then perhaps ties them back to our first question. And that is, everything clear so far? Everything more or less makes sense? The other popular question I found like to ask, which definitely ties in, is as follows. So let's go back to our pork sandwich. I give somebody a pork sandwich and he eats it 2 hours later. When do I violate this behavior? Do I violate it when he eats it? Or do I violate it when I give it to him? This is a sakira that has been attributed to the Sefer Yad Malachi. Sefer Yad Malachi that has a lot of klolim, so in Fal Shin Samach Zayin, he asks this question, and many, many later Achronim take it up in his name. So I have enabled somebody to eat non-kosher food. So at what point do I commit the Avera with Neivir? Do I commit the Avera when he eats it or when I give him the Mechshol? It's a very big Nafkamina. That's Yad Malachi, Shin Samach Zayin. It's a very big Nafkamina Lalacha. Why? Because what if he never eats it? Let's say he doesn't actually violate the Aver. So have I done anything wrong? Big Nafkamina. So that, I think, clearly ties into the other popular question. That if you believe that I partake in the Aver, so then I perhaps only partake in the Aver when he actually violates it. But if the Isser is putting a mitzvah, if the Isser is tripping him up, then we see the Torah phrase that not only is actually tripping, but potentially tripping. So it says, it doesn't mean you have to actually trip them up. So then, giving him the sandwich, whether or not he eats it, again, assuming that he's likely to eat it, if he's a person who for sure is not going to eat it, so then we're not getting into the discussion. But a person who's likely to eat it, but doesn't actually eat it, even so, I may violate the favor just by the very act of the Nesinas HaMishol, just by the very act of putting the Mishol in front of him. That creates a violation of listening to Lucy Tamichel. So that's the question the Amalachi wants to know, and that clearly ties back into the other popular question. And we've already explained how the popular question ties into our question titled the Pasuk, so they all tie it back into each other. The Adelachi brings different writers from different Gemaras that show one way or the other. For example, the Gemara in Moikat and Daf Yizayim and Aleph, that the Gemara says that one is not supposed to strike his older child. This question with the getter of older is an adult, but not that he's really grown up. But a child who is already a bar dash, perhaps, one is not supposed to strike him because he may strike back. And that's the Torah prohibition. So the Gemara says you're not supposed to provoke a child into doing that. That's a violation of Lifnei Iver. And the Amalachi observes that it sounds like Lifnei Iver is violated right away. That whether or not the child actually does respond in such a way, there's already a Lifnei Iver. So that Gemara perhaps gives you the impression that there's Lifnei Iver just by putting a mitzvah out there. So alternatively, there's Gemara in Kedushin, and that's on the day from an Aleph, that suggests that there's a whole story there about somebody who wanted to, on the basis of Aleph, somebody wanted to test his son to see if he would violate Kibbut Av Va'Em. So he tore up an expensive, or he pretended to tear up an expensive object in front of him in order to see how he would react. The Gemara there asks, maybe he would react badly, and then the father would have violated Lifnei Iver. So it sounds from the Gemara as if Lifnei Iver would only have been violated if the Aveira actually took place. Another way, this Gemara above Matzia, I have come across this year. You think that's the answer. The Gemara gives a way of getting out of it. But the very question of the Gemara, it seems to imply that
it would be overlooked.
That comes later. The Gemara answers up that it wasn't Lifnei Iver because he worked out a way that he technically wouldn't be in violation of anything. But the question of the Gemara, before it comes on to that answer, seems to suggest that Lifnei Iver would only theoretically have been violated if he actually did the Aveir. There's also a Gemara above the city, may have come across this year, I don't think it's done in this parak, but in the Zayin Esha, the Gemara in Ayin Hayim and Beis, states that a person who lends money without Eidim is in violation of Lifnei Iver. Why? Because he's tempting the person to deny the loan. One borrows money and nobody's there to testify, so it's easy for them to deny it later on, and the Gemara suggests that that's a violation of Lifnei Iver. It's a big question in Poskim, by the way. Many Poskim have troopers about this. The Olam does not seem to be makbid on this. People very often do lend money without worrying that other people are around, and the Gemara seems to say that's also. So it's a big discussion in Poskim why the Minhag Olam is like that. But the very reading of the Gemara seems to suggest, again, that one can violate Lifnei Iver regardless of what the result is. The very creation of a mitzvah is in itself a violation of Lifnei Iver. So the different Gemaras that have different ways. So this is a popular question also that that Achronim talk about most prominently in the name of the Ad Malachi, and it could also tie back to a lot of the central questions that we've been talking about. Just I don't want to go too long because it's kind of a complicated topic, so I don't want to overload too much. But just to mention a few other brief possible ramifications. So also, the question of non-Jews come up. So without going into it at great length, but so it's clear from the Gemara that there's a prohibition of Lifnei Iver to help a non-Jew to sin. But what about the non-Jew? Does he have a prohibition to help another non-Jew from sinning? Is there an issue of Lifnei Iver on non-Jews as the Machshel, not as Iver. Iver, it's clear, the Gemara is clear that they can be considered the Iver. But do they have a prohibition of being the Machshel as well? So that perhaps should also depend. That if you claim that Lifnei Iver is a separate issue, so it's not on the list, it's not one of the Shevet Mitzvahs. But if you believe that it's a general Chiddush HaTorah, that whenever you help somebody do an Aveira, you join in that Aveira also, so then maybe it's true by non-Jews also, that if they help, and one non-Jew helps another non-Jew, whatever, worship of Avodah Zarah, so, but maybe the Chiddush HaTorah is that a person who helps out somebody doing an Aveira joins in on that Aveira. So if a non-Jew helps another non-Jew do a Avodah Zarah, so maybe he's also considered to be an Avodah Zarah.
There would be then in the Chal Shabbos.
Oh, if he helps a Jew in the Chal Shabbos.
No, if he helps a guy in the Chal Shabbos.
Well, that's okay. Well, that's for sure okay, because he's got the Chal Shabbos. Right.
No, but he's got to do a Avodah Zarah.
Right, so that's different. If he helps the Jew, right, so whether or not... Right, that is harder to say that there should be an issue with an Avodah and a non-Jew to help a Jew to an Avodah. But let's just deal with the simpler case of a non-Jew helping another non-Jew. So is there a prohibition? So that may also tie into this question. The whole question of different levels of obligation brings to mind a often quoted position of the Emunah Shmuel. enough, Sefer Mir Shmuel is known for so much beyond this shita. There's the Kalim on Shulchan Aruch quotes in Siman Yizayin. I think we actually have one in the old Kol basement in the third floor, first base manager. I think there's an Emunah Shmuel on the shelf. And the Emunah Shmuel is quoted in the Nosi Kalim and the Shulchan Aruch, the following unique shita, which some Achronim endorse, some Achronim completely reject. It's a popular issue to talk about and take the side on one way or the other. The Emunah Shmuel is of the opinion that whatever the case is going to be, if I have an issue that doesn't apply to me, but it does apply to you, for whatever reason, so there is no issue which is either on me to help you do that other. Even though I'm helping you do something that you're not allowed to do. But if I am not relevant to that avera, if that avera is not applicable to me, so there's no issue listening to me. That's the whole discussion. Oh, right. That seems like to be a question. So one of the examples of the Gemara is that helping a nazir drink wine. So the person who's helping him is not himself prohibited in drinking wine because he's not a nazir. So that, the Emunah Shmuel, actually, if you read it inside, I think he explains why that's different. That because potentially you could be a nazir, so it's not completely irrelevant to you because you could take upon yourself nazirs. But if there's an issue that's not at all relevant to you to help somebody else do it, you're right that the Gemara, it sounds like it's not talking. Reading the Gemara sounds very different from what he's saying, but he is aware of that and incorporates that into his position. And so nazir is different because he could be a nazir, and therefore it's only any issue that could not at all apply to you, so then there's no issue with maybe to help somebody else out. Wimping payas is that is a little bit. I mean, that could be the case, but cutting payas is a little bit different because there the Gemara says specifically the nisr on the cutter and on the katim. So, but what about women who are in nisr payas man grama? That the Chasam Sofer talks about in his Trumas. But it could be that there's no concept of neiver by nisr payas man grama for women. That in the Chosh Mishpah in the Mishpah payas, the Chasam Sofer does have some sort of idea. But But his whole chiddush that if I help you do something that I'm not prohibited in, that's not a problem with me either. So whether you like this or not, and I mentioned it's a controversial position, Rick Lepunovich writes in his true list, he thinks this makes no sense. He says it's not shining at all, this is true. But it is cordon, that's the Kerala Shulchan Aruch. So how could this position make sense? So perhaps if one adopts the position of Lepunovich either, that you're not allowed to join in on somebody else's avera, so then maybe I can understand it. Then maybe the idea is that if I help you do an avera, I take part in it also. But if I'm not prohibited in that action, so maybe it doesn't matter if I help it, because it's not something that's relevant to me. But if you believe that it's tripping somebody up, so then it shouldn't make a difference whether I am relevant or not. And that's something I've grown to ask. That's something that I've grown to ask. But Chaim Lozer asked that guy to his truth. Right, then it shouldn't make a difference whether I'm loser or not. Right, then it's very hard to understand his position. That's something that Reb Chaim Moser asks in his Shuvahs, that however you understand Lefneiver Lumbus, but we know that there is an issue of Lefneiver to give somebody bad advice. So it's low garbage bad advice. If I give you a Heftim and a Vera, whether or not the Vera is relevant to me, why should that be any better than bad advice? That's a kasha that the Ezra asks on this. If you look in the Sefer Mishmeres Chaim, when they have the little terrorist from Scheinberg, he has a couple of discussions about that. There's a couple of discussions about the English.
Same question on the whole Rabbanim
of trade, how do you do that? It's also like in the... Right, so we need to be
rid
of Minnesota. Right, there are distinctions. If you look in the Sefer Chaim Ozer, looking in the Mishmeres Chaim also, they have different scholars to try to thing, which you're right, but theoretically speaking, you know, that somebody must be in that category. Hi.
It's very possible that she could hold that you're partaking in the Avera, but also holds that there's also a separate Avera on the Avera, isn't it?
Well, as we mentioned, the Moshe felt there was both Ben Abdul there and Ben Abdul Melech. I mean, maybe you want to say that it's not either or, that maybe they're...
If you win a Shmuel, we you're saying that these mechanics wouldn't necessarily work.
Right. If you believe that they're both, either way, if you believe that this is just to help to trip somebody up, and it's not called joining in their various, so certainly he doesn't want to force that component there at all. So it's difficult to see how that could be permissible. Hi. Yes, I want to get to that in a second. Yeah, that definitely would be relevant. I'm going to get to that in a second. It's a very important point. But just to mention one nikkud about that, so I think the Mishasinus discusses, other Rafaim discuss also, whether or not there's a raya one way or the other from Tosis of Chagidya and Dafi Gimel and Aleph. That Tosis asked, sorry, Gimel and Aleph, that here the Gemara says that there's a prohibition to teach Torah to non-Jews from the Pasuk of Torah Tivalana Moshe Moshe Shakir Adav. So, so Tosis asks, why do I need a pasuk to tell me that it's prohibited to teach Torah to non-Jews? So, because the Gemara in Sanhedrin already tells us that non-Jews aren't allowed to learn Torah. So to teach Torah to non-Jews would seem to violate with neither. That's what it sounds like. The parameters of that are beyond the scope of this discussion, but on the surface the Gemara seems to say that. So, again, without going into the details of that, which is a very broad discussion of the topic. But Tosfos writes, Tosfos asks in Chagiga why the Gemara there has to bring a pasuk to tell you not to teach. Why isn't teaching clearly a violation of Neivah? It should be prohibited anyway. So there's some discussion how the Emunah Shmuel would fit into that. Because if the Emunah Shmuel is correct, then anything that's not prohibited to you is no wish to listen to Neivah. So a lot of Achronim hold that Jews are allowed to learn Torah. So if Jews are allowed to learn Torah, so why should they be prohibited to teach as far as the Neivah? So some consider this Tosfos to be a raya against. You could say it's either a raya against or for, because you say that's the answer. But the answer is the Emunah Shmuel is correct, and that's why the Gemara needs to possibly tell you that it's prohibited because the Neivah doesn't apply. Or you could say it's a raya against, that Tosfos Kasha is showing that the fact that it's not even considering the Emunah Shmuel's answer shows that the Emunah Shmuel is wrong. You could take it one way or another. The Gemara learns it out from the positive part. We actually remember Shaq was that part. I forgot which positive was which. Oh, it could be a fun later. I forgot which positive was which. The Gemara learns that out from the positive also. So the question, as you mentioned, is also, and this is also something Scheinberg talks about. The question is shown in, what about the Surah Drabanan? So, if I give somebody a Surah Drabanan to violate, so what happens then? So do I violate with neither or not? So that there are a number of sheikhs. There are those who feel that I don't violate with neither by giving you a drabanan. There are those who feel I violate with neither and drabanan. And there are those who feel I violate with neither and that's all. And that should also seem to perhaps depend. That if I believe that by violating with neither I partake in your avera, so then it should be whatever you're violating. So it's hard to say that you violate Mr. Drabanan and I join in and I'm violating Mr. Dereis. I only violate Mr. Drabanan. But if you tell me that the nature of Lifnei Iver is not to trip somebody up, so then the fact that I'm tripping him up only in the Drabanan doesn't really matter. I am still doing Mr. Dereis of tripping him up in an act of a Drabanan. And yes, it seems a little bit illogical in light of the consideration that we often have for Shaloyeh Tofel Chavim and Acre, that we normally believe that it's hard for a subsidiary player to be worse than the primary player. But nonetheless, it might be the case that even though he's the one actually doing it, and I'm the one helping him, maybe I am worse than, maybe I am more guilty than he is. Maybe I am in violation of Mr. Iso while he is in violation of Mr. Yerbon. It's possible. So that's a major discussion. Right, so Yachiezer's question on the Emunah Shmuel comes into play here also. That even if you, and that's the strength of a lot of those who believe that there's Nisra Deraisa from Neivah, even on Nisra Drabanan, because why is it any worse than bad advice? If I give somebody bad advice, I violate the Neivah Minotaur for sure. So if I give you Nisra Drabanan, that's, again, just like the Emunah Shmuel's problem, that would also seem to be no worse, no better than bad advice. So that's part of the strength behind the position of those who would say that one violates Lifnei Iver Minat Torah by giving somebody a drabanan. Still get into the whole discussion here of the Mesivis, you know, the Tanisician Mesivis, which has come up many times. The difference, without going into the whole setup, the Mesivis has a position which some disagree with, that there's a difference between Yisuri Dereis and Yisuri Drabanan. The Yisuri Dereis are inherently wrong. And Yisuri Dereis, if a person eats a pork sandwich in the Torah, so that's an inherent theft of Yisur. And even if I eat it by accident, even if it's a shogeg, I eat a kapara because I have consumed something inherently bad. But the Mesivis and the Chiddush, that if I eat Nisa Drabanan by accident, so there's no need for any kind of kapara because that's nothing. Because Yisuri Drabanan are not inherently bad. It's just Chazal tell us not to do that. But they don't create a status in the object. So if I eat Nisa Drabanan by accident, so I'm not rebelling because it was an accident, and there was nothing inherently wrong with what I ate, so there's no need for any kind of kapara. I don't disagree with this. There are some Arabs that agree with this, there are some Engel that agree with this, but the Mesivis is a very popular position on this point, that Yisuri Drabanan are not inherently bad. So we're not allowed to use them, but they're not inherently bad, and Yisuri Dereis are inherently bad. So some suggest that's relevant here also, that maybe if I give you a pork sandwich, that's called a mishal. That's a trait, you know, that's called a mishal. But if I give you something that's also a Drabanan, there's nothing wrong with that object. Chazal tell us not to consume it, or not to do whatever it is with it, but it's not inherently any kind of a status, and that's why the Achorim believe that Lufthi Iver doesn't apply to, maybe at all, to Yisroel Drabanan, because you're not giving something that's objectively a mikshul. And that also, how exactly you relate to that, could tie into that whole question. I'll just mention one last point, and then maybe try to quickly review some major points. It's also a question, the Shonim seem to be generally behesim that one does not get malchus for violating Mishnah either, even though it's a deraisa, it's a lot of deraisa, and nonetheless, there are no malchus, even though that's normally what qualifies your malchus is a lot, a lot of nether. So the question is why. So there's some Rishonim who write that it's a lot of shame for Meisle. So why is it a lot of shame for Meisle? If I put a rock in front of someone, if I give somebody a pork sandwich, that's a Meisle. So it could be that that's understanding that the Yisr is really partaking in the Avera, and the Avera is, it occurs when the person does the Avera, and therefore at that time you're not really doing anything. Masha'in came, if you believe that giving the Mishal is a problem, then it's hard to see why that's called Lav Shein B'Maisa. There's another sheet in Rishonim why there's no Malchus. If you believe that the Yisr is giving somebody the Avera, that is a Maisa. If you believe that the Yisur is that you partake in their Avera, so then you're perhaps not doing an Avera then, you're doing a Maisa then, because by the time they're actually eating it, you're past it. Sorry?
Right,
the theory. Then you get to the whole Machlokas, whether or not Lashon Mice is something that always across the board qualifies, or only in cases when you violate the Rambam Bar Chamit, the whole discussion. But there's another explanation of why there's no Malchus, which would also actually fall on the same side of the figure. It's interesting about the question that we started with, and that there's some who suggest that the reason there's no Malchus is because we call Lav Shem Klolus. The Lav Shem Klolus, roughly speaking, it's Machlok Tishon, what that means, and Rishachi has an article about it, and Bishot Tishon, and I think Rishi Prince makes it firm, that Lav Shem Klolus basically, roughly speaking, means that if you have an Isser that's interpreted in many different ways, a Lav that comes across in many different ways, so one does not get Malchus for that Lav. Question we've shown him whether you don't get Malchus for the additional interpretations or for any of the interpretations, but whatever it means, Lashon HaKlolos is some type of an exemption from Malchus. I'm sorry?
No.
Lashon HaKlolos is an exemption from Malchus. So whether or not it's appropriate to call this either, Lashon HaKlolos is basically the question we're discussing. Do we believe that there are additional Yisurim being interpreted from this puzzle? Or no, it's not Lashon HaKlolos. It's all one big pasuk. The pasuk says, one big broad issue, don't trip up people. Whether that be financially or intellectually or whatever, it's all one big concept. And if that's the case, then why would you call it Lashon HaKlolos? But if you call it Lashon HaKlolos, that seems to suggest that you're taking the other interpretation, that the other Yisurim that we have are additional levels of interpretation that Chazal have taught us are also included in the pasuk. Just to briefly summarize, we spoke about, so we mentioned the three levels of interpretation of the Iver, that's typical physically, not to give people bad advice, not to help out with another Iver, and discussed some of the technical details of that, and then discussed the question of whether or not there's one pasuk interpreted in a very broad sense, or whether it's differently certain types of the same pasuk, and that could perhaps affect some of the well-known questions in this to the popular questions of this topic, the question of whether you partake in the Avera itself, whether you trip somebody up, whether you partake in the Avera itself, whether you're just tripping somebody up, which could be tied back to how you read the Pasuk, which has nafkaminas for mummer, and has nafkaminas for your hungry avo, and other such things. And whether that affects also the question of whether we call it another makam and alma chavera, which affects the question of mafila, which affects the question that Mendel brought up, and it could possibly be an al-swarim in some cases, mafila. And it also affects the other question that Chazal talked about from the Amalachi, whether the Yisr is violated when the person actually commits the Avera or just by the act of giving the Mishal, which clearly ties back to the other question, and which would have another nafkamina if the person never violates the Avera. And we discussed the position with the Emunah Shmuel, there's no Yisr if the Yisr is not relevant to you, and that case only makes sense if you believe it's partaking in the Avera. We discussed some of the discussion of that, and also the question of whether or not the Yisr is Rabbanan, the one who gives an Yisr Rabbanan, does he violate the Avera at all, or Ben HaTorah, or what? And that may also go to the same question and discuss some of the details of that. Just mentioned, actually, I don't want to get into questions of Lamaisa. The one very important question of Lamaisa that people talk about, which I'm not going to have about Lamaisa, but ties into the question of the Rabbanans, is many, many posts can talk about a very important question. If you're going to invite somebody over to your house and give them food, and if you know they don't wash, you know they don't make brachas, so is it permissible to do that? Because basically you're putting them in a position of eating without making brachas or washing, so are you allowed to do that? So one important issue is it's a research abundant, probably, and it's a question whether or not research abundant has the same issue in there. The most prominent source on that is the Chuvah in Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, where he discusses the case of a person who's going to invite somebody over on a hot day and not offer them food, and the guy's going to hate all and offer anything to drink, and the guy's going to hate all religious Jews, and he's going to say that they're all nuts and who cares about Torah. So there, the list of either is much larger and not offering food. So you have to not lose sight of the forest and the trees and realize that if you're going to cause somebody to hate Judaism, that's going to be a bigger lesson either than causing him to drink water in the hot day without a buck. So that's a major issue for us to talk about, which we're not going to get into the details, but that comes out also with the Rabbanan question. And then we also discussed the question of why you don't get Malkus lesson either, and the two positions both seem to come on one side of the Chakir, the issue of whether it's Lashon B'Maisa, which seems to suggest you're joining in the Avera, that's why there's no Maisa, or Lash Maklalos, which also seems to suggest you're joining in the Avera, because that's what would be a distinct interpretation as opposed to just saying it's one big thing, and being distinct, it could then justifiably be called a Lash Maklalos. Should I say that more or less makes sense?
Yeah.
I think next week is